The end of empire. The slow collapse. I've done a series of these podcasts, all under the title of The End of Empire. Because over the 19 years that I've been here at Bealtaine Cottage, I have slowly watched the disintegration of what is known as the Western world. I can't speak for the Far East. I can't speak for Northern Eurasia. I can't speak for South America. But I have been visited. I have visited parts of the Western world. But more than that, as a lover of history, I am very well versed in the study of empire, beginning with the Roman Empire, which is one of many civilizations, and coming full circle to the empire of the Western world. The Western world has depended so much on what it refers to as third world countries for the benefit of its own material wealth, and also the increasing, along with the material wealth, the increasing dislocation of the population from a good standard of living. There was a sort of equality that came with the end of World War II. Now, certainly not with the end of World War I. There was disintegration and this slow deepening of the abyss between the haves and the have-nots. But certainly with World War II, there was a different mindset that all these men brought home from World War II. I myself had a great uncle Tom, who died in World War II. He was drowned. He was drowned in a landing craft that was destined for the D-Day landings. I'll tell you a little bit about that, perhaps in this podcast or perhaps in another. But those soldiers who did make it through and who came home after World War II actually demanded a better living standard for themselves and their families. And also, not just demanded it, but set about creating it. And you know, for the first time, certainly in British history, you had some very well-educated and eloquent men and women of the people. And anyone who cares to look at how Parliament developed after World War II will see those, in many cases, outstanding figures. And you had a Labour Party, for example, in England, in Great Britain, in the UK, that was built from the people up. It now appears in many cases to be taken over from the top down. That one aspect of history in the making should be enough to point most thinking people in the direction of asking questions as to why things are as they are. I can only speak from my own perspective. And along with the increasing materialism that came from about the early 80s onwards, has been a huge disparity, a sort of a widening gap between people's own standard of living and the state of Mother Earth. And it's something that we rarely think about, but every single thing we own, from our mobile phones to the coats on our backs to the food that we eat to the houses that we live in, everything comes from Mother Earth. Think about that for a moment. Just take that in for a moment. Everything comes from Mother Earth. I don't know if this podcast is picking up the sounds of the rain on the roof of my little studio here. But if it is, it's adding a gentle, rhythmic backdrop. To the thinking minds, you who are listening and who are formulating those pictures in your own head of how Mother Earth gives us everything. And so we are now living through history itself. We are living through a time when we have full access to events that are happening in the world. Well, I say full access, perhaps that's with a little bit of tongue in cheek, because a lot of what's happening in the world is very much subterfuge and hidden from us. And there are lots of agendas at play. And to even begin to talk about these, one is instantly labelled a conspiracy theorist. Well, I don't believe in that nonsense conspiracy. I believe in, it's a question. Could it be like this? Is there any evidence? Can we dig deeper? It's as though in many ways we are refused the, what shall I call it? I suppose in some ways the ability to even question, because certainly students are not coming out of schools with questioning minds. It appears that education can be in many cases just a tick box process. So all those youth of the 60s, the protests, the huge protests against war, I don't think they're going to be happening anytime soon. I think the last great protest was something that I myself took part in, and that was in 2003, when I marched with about 2 million others in London against the illegal invasion of Iraq. Now, I mention this because historically, when you look back at how empires fall and how empires end, there's a sort of embarrassed silence towards the end. Yes, you're aware of the bread and circuses and the Colosseum and the mindless entertainment, in some cases the brutal entertainment. Actually, in many cases back then, the brutal entertainment, all to keep the people from questioning, from realising what was happening around them, to keep them from taking to the streets. And I remember reading about Cicero and the way in which he himself questioned his own governorship, his own Senate, in Rome, and how that wasn't to be tolerated. So in many cases, the questioning voices are put into a state of silence, whether it be through prison or other means. So this end of empire, anyway, is happening at such a quick pace that each day I find out something new. Something new which adds to this sort of wall. It's been built slowly. Or perhaps it's not a good analogy, but something which is, you know, it's one brick on top of the other, or one stone on top of the other. Perhaps that's better, a better analogy. But the sheer consequences of what is happening on the wider stage is cascading down to the people so quickly that one knows that this closing down of empire is happening, really happening. I mean, when people can no longer afford to heat their homes, for no other reason, by the way, than corruption. I mean, people talk about, oh, there's a war here or a war there and that's affecting it. From where I'm sitting, that's rubbish. It's sheer corruption. When you have privatised industries, when you have the very basic essentials that society needs privatised to the extent where profits are all, nothing counts other than profits. Very little investment is put in. I was born and reared under a system where the basic utilities, which any society needs as a very basic level, they were all under public ownership. And yes, it was always criticism. But although I grew up in poverty, there was always a fire in the grate. There was always gas in the stove and the ability to cook. There certainly weren't food banks, and yet I grew up in poverty. So what are today's children growing up in? If they're hungry, if there's not enough facility in the home to cook a dinner, if there's not enough energy that can be bought in, if it's so expensive that the home is cold, then all this is a much worse poverty than I grew up in. So, what is it that we can do? Because it always comes down to the practicalities of life in that moment. Well, in many ways, I saw this coming a very, very long time ago. The interest in geopolitics was sparked by my father, who was a civil rights activist. And a man with a lot of moral integrity, who believed deep, deep in his heart in social justice. Very few people these days even know what social justice is. But for my father, it was a roof over one's head, a meal on the table, a fire to warm oneself by, and free education and healthcare. Not a lot to ask. And yet we have some of the wealthiest countries in the world who don't provide any of that. Now, this isn't a podcast about facts and figures. I could do a lot of research and come up with lots of facts and figures to underpin what it is I'm saying. But you don't have to scratch the surface very much yourself to understand what's going on. And you know it's so important to understand what's going on, because when you understand the situation you're in, and you have a good idea of how that happened, how did we come to a point where, in a very short space of time, so many people were impoverished so quickly? How is it that we allow our politicians off the hook? That there's always a brighter sun rising. Oh, well, this government wasn't very good, so we'll vote in another party and they'll do better. They never do seem to do any better. Not even at times when we expect them to talk to each other. They don't even talk to each other. My father always said, Colette, keep the lines of communication open, always. Very few politicians even have the social manners to do that. And hence we have war and poverty and degradation, and here we are at this seeming end of empire. So again, what is it that we can do? I know that I personally have seen what's coming down the road, prepared for it. In the early years of the Bealtaine project, I was looked upon as someone who's a little bit crazy. But not so crazy now. So we really have to come together as communities. You see, small communities are resilient. You know, one person, like myself, can be resilient. But if there's 10 or 20 of me, of like-minded people, we are even more resilient. Because what I'm good at, I can do. What I'm not good at, someone else can do. Someone else might be good at that. So this idea of community is incredibly powerful. And you know, from where I've been sitting, standing, working, moving the past 19 years, I've seen Western governments go out of their way to break down community, to create a sort of never-ending infighting situation where they've thrown up lots of smoke screens. And again, it's very indicative of what's happening. Look historically, and you know, you can see similar stuff happening. There is no need to go out and take on the mindset of I don't even know what they're called. What are they called? Preppers. That's what they're called. One doesn't need to become a prepper, you know, to start to take into account what's happening and make preparations. Not laying down stores and stores of food and fuel and all the rest of it, because not everybody's able to do that. but to know what we're facing into, to be able to recognise what's going on in the markets a little bit and how you're going to be affected in the coming days, weeks, months. To learn how to cook different foods, how to make a meal. I mean, everyone should be able to pull at least four recipes out of their heads for four good, basic, cheap meals. And I'll give you an example of what I did in London years ago when my children were small. Usually about the end of August, beginning of September, sometimes going all the way through to about November when the harvest season started, we would drive out into Hertfordshire in the countryside. It was about a half an hour's drive from North London. And as we were driving along the country roads, you'd see signs that farmers put up, you know, potatoes for sale, carrots, etc. And we would pull up a country lane and go into a farmyard, and there'd be a stall there, and I'd buy a sack of potatoes. Now, when I say a sack, it would be two or three stone of potatoes. What's that? £28, maybe more, maybe £35 of potatoes. A sack of carrots. A sack of onions. And in the garden that we had in London, there was an old World War II air raid shelter. It was built of cast concrete. It was very strong and very cold because obviously there was no windows in it. And so I would store my vegetables in there. And also, because we had a garden, I kept hens. Now, originally I kept them because they were, I mean, hens make beautiful pets, actually. Lovely pets. But there was half a dozen hens. There were rescued hens as well. And there was always a supply of eggs. And you know this whole thing about, oh, a hen doesn't lay eggs all the year round? I beg to differ. Our hens laid eggs all the time. There was never an off-peak season with egg laying. But then the hens were happy, well-fed, had plenty of light, beautiful warm nesting, access to the garden, albeit, you know, a small access. There were happy hens, and they laid accordingly. And so there was always the ability to make a meal. Anything from baked potatoes with butter and beans to, you know, omelettes, homemade pancakes, quiche. I raised my kids on very little money, but we always had really healthy, nutritious food. I never bought biscuits. I always made flapjacks, and the flapjacks were made with oats, incredibly cheap to buy, butter when I could afford it, or some quality margarine, some brown sugar, a little bit of syrup, because if you add a little bit of syrup to them, it takes away that harsh crunchiness and makes them a bit more chewy. And sometimes I put in grated nuts. We used to go and collect hazelnuts. We used to go up to the health food shop on a Saturday evening, just before closing, and you'd get the yogurts, which were beginning to go off, you know, for a few pennies. And so I would buy milk that was going off, and I'd buy yogurts that were going off. Because if you wanted to make scones, I mean, milk that's on the turn or yogurts that are on the turn, absolutely fantastic and very nutritious. So there's so many ways of insulating yourself from this chaotic, this kind of financial chaos that's going on. Now, that's just one aspect. And it is about insulating yourself, because you can't take yourself out of society. I mean, I did 19 years ago, and most people thought I was mad to do so. I think the same people now are saying, oh, Colette, you were lucky. Well, no, I wasn't lucky. I was aware. I made myself aware of what was going on around me. Know what is going on around you. Over the years, I taught myself how to sew. My mother taught me how to knit. I taught myself how to crochet. I taught myself how to cook and bake. I used my local library. I took out lots of books. There's very little that I can't do, because the way that I look at it is, it's in a book somewhere. Of course, now we have the internet. You can just type in your keywords and voila. So it is about insulating oneself against this, because you know what happened at the end of the Roman Empire? This huge collapse where all the territories that Rome had occupied were suddenly evacuated. The people within the empire who were there just living in their world, looking after the land, or just being, just getting by, they continued. Nothing much happened to them. Things that happened at the very top, where the so-called civilization that the people at the top had created imploded. Well, as my grandmother used to say, let them at it. Let them at it. Blessings to you all.